All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 29 in our Ancient History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We continue with the story of Mesopotamia today, and we're going to now get to that part where the connections really start to show up to the rest of history. We are going to see connections between Mesopotamia and Egypt. We are going to see Mesopotamia and Persia. We are also going to see Mesopotamia and Israel, which is both a modern country and a very ancient one. And finally, we are going to see a connection between Mesopotamia and Greece. So all of the ways in which Mesopotamian history connects to the modern world pretty much are going to get crammed in here, and we'll see them all. So let's get to this story of how that happens. So let me share my screen here with you guys and just quickly mention that once again, you have on the Lecture 29 resources for today, you have the self-test. And so you can bring that up on your screen and you can, oh my gosh, the fonts are too big. All right. Well, I'm sorry about that. I rushed. And so you cannot see the word history with a question mark here. And you can't, but you got most of it there. So actually you can see the questions, but I didn't notice that that got cut off by the margin. I apologize for that. And in the later versions of this, I will fix it. But what is the study of Mesopotamian history called? That'll be something we talk about early on here. What is one way Assyria connects to modern history? So we're going to focus on that. And then what famous monument is shown in our painting, which we're going to come back to, is the third question, okay, on the self-test. So go ahead and bring that up and take a look at that while we're going along and see if you can catch the answers to those as we are doing the lecture today. And, of course, the self-test answers will be posted today as well. All right, so we started with Akkad and Sumer, and they got unified and broken up and unified again. There's not much to say about all of that, except when we get to this character named Hammurabi. And he is kind of fascinating because he is a king who gives his archaic kingdom a set of laws called the Code of Hammurabi. And in that set of laws, we have the idea, the main idea, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So the punishment is supposed to fit the crime, but what did we learn about the promises of a king? Never believe the promises of a king. What did we see in the actual, you know, the actual fairness of the Code of Hammurabi? What did we see, Rosetta?
It's not really true.
Not really true, but why?
In the Code of the Hammurabi, it has to be equal rank in rank because
people are not equal in rights, are they? Right? People are not equally treated by the law. Call that equality before the law. So this is an archaic society in which people don't have equal rights. Okay. So, not really true. And so we can look at it, and there are some interesting ideas in an ancient code of laws like this. But they really, what they really show us is how far we've come, because if you get a chance to study modern law, I tell people all the time now, don't ever bother studying history in college, but if you get a chance to study the law in college, that might be an interesting subject to study, because it's amazing. It is a really fantastic accomplishment of modern civilization, especially the United States, greater than any other, for sure, the laws of the United States. And just to study the law is, I think, one of the most fascinating things you could do if you wanted to study things about that are related to history and that are very important. So you could learn things like what the Constitution is and how it works, and how rights are protected, and how the legal profession works, and how judges and juries and all of those things work. It's really fascinating. And the modern law is so, it's one of our greatest things in modern society. We have technology, we have some wonderful things, but really the law, our ability to create a legal code to organize our lives as human beings is among our greatest accomplishments. And so we look back on Hammurabi and he says, you punch somebody's tooth? Well, I'm going to get the police officer to punch you in the face. I mean, come on, right? I mean, in modern times, we would be shocked by something like that. That would go onto Facebook right away. And everybody would be demanding that that police officer got fired, right? Because what's a police officer today supposed to do? He's supposed to get very calmly, carefully, put you under arrest, right? And take you before a magistrate, which means a judge. And there's a whole process. And if you are accused of a crime, what are you supposed to get in modern America? I hope you guys know this. You're supposed to tell that to the policeman anytime you're arrested. What do you get? Guaranteed. Anybody know? You get a lawyer. You get an expert in the law. You don't have to take care of it yourself. You are guaranteed a lawyer who is an expert in the law to help you in your defense. Because another beautiful thing in modern law is you are presumed innocent. So the law treats you as an innocent person who is accused of a crime, and then it must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt that you committed a crime before the government will do anything to harm your person or take away your rights. It must be proven that you are a criminal. And that is a very long and careful process. It's really an amazing thing. It's absolutely fantastic the way things work today compared to in the past. In the past, you punch somebody's teeth in. Well, they drag you before the king. He sees that the tooth is missing. The guy says, he punched me. And so he says to the police officer, punch that guy. And, you know, okay, great. We have justice, supposedly. Right? Of course, if you are a lord and your slave punched you, well, then you can kill him. And so much for human beings and treating each other in a civilized way. Right? So this ancient code really is an interesting thing to study as a part of history, because it really helps us to see how far we've come and how far away we are from this ancient kind of way of people treating each other. All right, so having finished with Hammurabi and his code of laws, well, as it turns out, we are even further removed from him because Babylon also was destroyed. So not only was the Akkadian Empire destroyed, but then the Babylonian Empire of Hammurabi was destroyed. This is pretty much the pattern of things in Mesopotamian history. It's not quite like Egypt. In Egypt, somebody like Menes Narmer comes along, he unifies it. And then things are okay for a while, and then it falls apart. And then somebody comes along and puts it back together again, and it falls apart. And it's kind of, you know, unification and breaking up. In Mesopotamia, there's always some new powerful group that comes in and destroys everything, usually really barbaric, like the Guti from yesterday, right? And today our barbarians are known as the Kassites. In this story, they destroy the Babylonian Empire, and somebody's got to put it back together again. Well, finally, we're going to get to an empire that's going to have last a certain amount of time and have some interesting impact, even all the way to the present. So we're waiting for that, right? Because we haven't seen anything that is part of this story yet that would say, okay, I see how that connects to my life. If we look at the code of Hammurabi, we see, well, I see how that doesn't connect to my life. It's old, it's archaic, all right? But let's see, there is something that connects to modern times. And it comes in the form of this empire that features on the right-hand side of your map of Mesopotamia, that hopefully by this point you have completed as a geography assignment. And I did my best here to create kind of a set of concentric borders, if you get the idea, right? The black part is Assyria around 1000 BC, and then it gets bigger around 800 BC, and then it gets bigger again around 650 BC. All right, so I'm showing you kind of the Assyrian Empire growing. And this is part of the reason why the history of Mesopotamia is called Assyriology. Let me type that out for you here. The importance of Assyria in our story of Mesopotamia is part of the reason why Assyria is what actually gave the name to the study of Mesopotamian history. We do not call Mesopotamian history Mesopotamiology, right? Like the study of the region between the two rivers. I suppose we could if we wanted to choose geography for the name. But usually the history of something is the name of it is chosen according to a culture or a people, right? People that do something historically significant. And the main reason why I think Assyriology became the name of Mesopotamian history is because the Assyrians, the people who built this empire, were connected to the people who wrote the Bible. They were connected to the people of at least what we call the Ancient Testament, that really, really old part of the Bible, and in particular, people who are known. They have different names. Sometimes they're called the Hebrews, or sometimes they are called the Israelites, and more very, very generally, nowadays they are known as the Jews. And the story of Assyria is importantly connected to these people. And, of course, we know that Christianity is very important to history. We see it in our anchor fact. The very calendar that we use is connected to the birth of Jesus, is connected to the story of Christianity. So, the fact that Assyria is a part of the world that connected closely to the ancient people of the Bible is, it's not surprising then that when people who were Christians, who were Europeans, decided to study Mesopotamia, well, what was the part of it that they knew about? What was the part that they had heard of as Christians in particular? What they had read about in the Bible, in stories that are in the Bible, they had heard about Assyria, among others. But Assyria was the most ancient one that they had heard about. So the study of Assyria became Assyriology, is the study of Mesopotamia. Now, later on, the experts found out, oh, well, before Assyria, there was Babylon. And before Babylon, there was Sumer and Akkad and all of that. So they really stretched out the ancient history way past Assyria. So in a way, it seems kind of unfair if we're looking at it today and we say, well, it's called Assyriology. Well, that's just named after Assyria. It seems a little bit unfair to all the Babylonians and all the Sumerians and so on. But, you know, usually when a name is chosen and people use it for quite a while, it sticks. Can anybody think of another example of that? How about the country that we live in, and the continent is known as America? Does anybody know the story of that? Why it's called that? It should be called Colombia, but it's not. So why is it called America? It's not named after Christopher Columbus. It's not even named after any of the closest competitors of Christopher Columbus, like in the other Italian navigator was called Giovanni Caboto, who discovered Canada, and others around that time. So not named after any of the first explorers who came to the Americas. It's named after a character named Amerigo Vespucci, who kind of stole the credit, kind of got his name to be a part of the continent when Columbus didn't get the honor. It started to get onto the maps in Europe. America started to become the name on the maps in Europe, and it's stuck, right? We have it now. So names are, you know, once we get them there, they tend to kind of stick. So Assyriology is the study of Mesopotamian history. So is there anything interesting about Assyria? Well, there is, but I'm sorry to say it's not nice. So I won't spend too much time on it. So, Patrick, you can look away if you want, because this is a painting that will make you upset. It's not that bad, but I'm sure it will upset Patrick. Here is a painting of an Assyrian king attacking Egypt. The Assyrians were great and brutal conquerors. And this is a very a very sad, mean story that has to do with the fact that Egyptians used to kind of treat cats like they were kind of like they were gods. So in this story, as a part of the attack on a part of Egypt, the Assyrians were throwing cats at the Egyptian soldiers. So I won't keep that on the screen very long because it's very unpleasant. But here's the point about the Assyrians. Actually, you know what? I think I have an image of an Assyrian king that also would be really... how come I don't have it here? I had an image of an Assyrian king really trying to be... Do I have to have a capital letter to make the search work? Oh, sort of. Yeah, this is... wait a minute. There it is. Is it? No, not that one. That one also will make some people upset. Assyrian king... killing some lions for sport. So obviously the Assyrians didn't care about animals. But more than that, yeah, darn, I had a picture of an Assyrian king. I'm just going to put this away so that we don't have to look at it. The Assyrian kings were great conquerors. They were very... they were mean. They were brutal. And since this was an archaic time that they were living in, that sadly was part of their success. Right? If human beings cannot live in a civilized way and violence is how they settle their disputes, then who's going to be the most successful? If violence is how anything gets decided, who's going to be the most successful? The nicest people? The best people? Who's going to win?
The Assyrians.
The Assyrians? Why? In general, who's going to win?
The Assyrian king.
Well, no, that's more specific. I mean, what kind of person is going to be the best in a world like that? Rosetta?
Mean.
The meanest kind. Yeah, sadly, the ones that are the most expert at violence. The ones that are the most expert at violence. And that was the Assyrians. So that's why the Assyrians were able to conquer not only this region, but they were able to conquer Egypt for a while, and create for a while quite a powerful empire, because they were very mean conquerors. And this is also a part of the connection between Assyria and modern history. So remember how important does not mean good, right? Here's an interesting example of that. The Assyrians are important in a strange sort of way to history because of what they did to the Israelites, because of what they did to the Jews. These conquerors were really mean. And they knew that when you conquer somebody and you want to rule them, you better watch out because they're going to rebel against you, right? If you're not a nice king or a nice set of rulers, that seems kind of like a contradiction anyway, right? But if you're not nice, if you're a tyrant, if you're really mean conquerors, then the people are going to rebel against you. So the Assyrians had a formula for stopping people from rebelling. What they did was they took people from wherever they lived, took all of them, and moved them somewhere else, took them from their homes, and moved them to another part of the empire. So the Assyrians were the first to do this. They kind of taught this technique to the terrible kingdoms and empires of Mesopotamia. The Assyrians were the first to take the Jewish people and force them from their homes. And we live in modern history today. We have the story of this country of Israel that was created in modern times. And the whole story of Israel is about the Jewish people getting back to their homes. Their home from thousands of years ago that they were torn from and attacked and constantly persecuted and having their lives ruined by all of their neighbors over and over again. And the Assyrians were the first to do that. So what we have here connected to modern life, and one of the stories that people are so troubled by today is what is happening in Israel. And this is connected to, I'm going to write it out here, it's called the Jewish diaspora. There is a very important vocabulary word for history. And this is the connection between, one of the connections between between Assyria and modern history is what the Assyrians did to the Jews. They started this trend, we could call it, or this series of events called the Jewish diaspora. So that's the connection, because what happened is over and over again, the Jews were forced from their homeland, and sometimes they were forced to go to Mesopotamia. Sometimes they were forced to go to different parts of the Roman Empire. Sometimes they were forced to go to different parts of the Muslim empires of later history. Sometimes they were forced to go to different parts of Europe, and so on and so on, until after the worst thing that was ever done to the Jews, which was the Holocaust of World War II, they finally settled back down in Israel and they were able to make a homeland for themselves. And now we have modern history. We have the people who today just have no sense of this amazing story and how important it is to the people of Israel and the amazing history behind that country and the struggles of the people there. So now today in modern history, if you study the modern world, you will see this country of Israel, and it's surrounded by enemies, and it's really, really tough on the people there, and nobody is really helping them anymore. It's really quite shocking, and everybody has turned against Israel and says that they are not nice in the way that they're treating their neighbors. And it's really quite shocking, if you really understand history, that anybody could say that to the poor people of Israel. But anyway, there it is, the connection. The modern country of Israel exists because the people, the Jewish people, recreated their homeland after being forced from it by the Assyrians, and then the Babylonians, and then the Romans, and then the Muslims, and then the Europeans, and finally they got it back. So, quite an amazing tale. And so that is a connection. The Jewish diaspora is a connection between Assyria. And again, right, like I said, important is not good. The Assyrians were brutal. They were mean. They were horrible. I guarantee you, nobody in their right mind would have wanted to live in the Assyrian Empire. And I could tell you stories that would give you nightmares, but because this is the elementary class, I'm not going to do it. Really, it was. The Assyrians were horrible. And so, fortunately, there, as the saying goes, who knows how to complete this sentence? Live by the sword! Dot, dot, dot. Live by the sword, Sigourney?
Die by the sword!
Die by the sword, Assyria! So that is exactly what happened. Assyria was conquered itself because the bigger the empire that you create, and this is going to be important because we're getting to Persia here shortly, right? The bigger the empire you create, what's the problem you're going to have? Patrick?
The more enemies you're going to have.
Exactly. Well said, right? The bigger your empire, that means the more people that you killed, the more people that you conquered, the more people are going to hate you. So the more people are going to want to fight you. And the more neighbors you're going to have that are going to be afraid of you. And so that's exactly what happened to Assyria. Is that it made a lot of enemies, and it made various enemies until finally the whole area was conquered and replaced by, as you can see down here, the Persian Empire. So it's kind of a long and tedious story, and actually I'm not even really going to tell it to you guys. I'm going to tell it just kind of as a joke. This will be fun. This is the story of Assyria. So let me tell you the story of Assyria with a simple annotation here. Okay? So over here we have Egypt, and over here we have Assyria. So, and then, however, over here we have another group, an alliance of two other powers, Media and Babylonia. And then over here, we have Persia. So there's some Mesopotamian history following Assyria. That's pretty much all we're going to say about it. I can't believe I'm not getting any laughs. Oh my gosh. All right, so big fish eats little fish. I think that's like a Chinese proverb or something. So basically, that's what happened. And we're going to really... Yes, Patrick?
So this is what happened exactly? Egypt ate Assyria.
No, not the other one. Assyria ate Egypt.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Then Media and Babylon ate Assyria, and then Persia ate...
All of them, right? The whole point is each one keeps... The bigger fish keeps swallowing up the other ones. And so it's funny but boring in a way, right? Because it's just... There's nothing interesting about this other than one is bigger and stronger than the other. Yes.
Sort of like a special showing of how powerful each place is.
Yes, it is, right? That's kind of the key to it, is that when you live by the sword, or when you live by eating other fish, then probably you're going to be eaten by fish. So this is the history of Mesopotamia getting all the way to Persia. The only thing that's kind of interesting about these guys in the middle, Media and Babylonia here, is the Medes, the characters from Media, that we have nothing to say about them. They were barbarians. There's no records of what they did. They didn't keep any history. They really are uninteresting. The Babylonians, however, are somewhat interesting. And now I got to leap back here to something, because I'm going to reveal something about a painting that we did. So let me quickly go back here. Where is it? Is it this one? There it is. Well, I'm going to tell you something now. I'm going to actually reveal something about one of our paintings. Oh my gosh, Mr. Powell, you've been holding us in suspense all this time. This is Babylon. The city in this painting is Babylon. Okay? I'm not yet going to tell you who the characters are in the painting. But the city in this painting is Babylon. And in the time of the Babylonians, the new Babylonians, the ones that conquered Assyria. So historians call them, because they were new, and there was another one before them, they call it the Neo-Babylonian Empire. In this new Babylon, this greater version of Babylon than ever before, there were some amazing things. There was the ziggurat of Babylon, which was that Tower of Babel, and the other of the most famous monuments that created by the Babylonian kings were known as the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. So I'm chatting that in your box. And that is the one that is featured in our painting. Here it is. Remember how we noticed that there was this strange construction in the painting? It's a big, big structure. And, well, the weird thing about it was the forest is on top, right? So this is what is featured in our paintings. And pretty much the only thing that we need to know or kind of something that's a little bit famous about the Babylonians is that the kings created somebody, some architect that we don't know about at all, made the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. So that's the famous monument that's in our painting. Anyway, we will get back to this painting again, but I just wanted you to know, I'm going to give you hints in small doses here, that the city that features in this, and it's being conquered, right? We know, we said, we analyzed the painting and we said, this is after the army of this city has been defeated, the conqueror is entering the city. So this is a painting of Babylon being conquered. Okay? But by whom? By the Persians? Is it by the Persians? I'm not going to tell you yet. Okay, so, anyway, big fish eats little fish. The Persian Empire comes along. I'm going to show you a map of the size of the Persian Empire. That'll be where we end for today. Right? We have to go to a new scale of map. Right? When we go back to this over here, you can see that, well, the Persian Empire just goes off in all directions. Well, how big was it? Right? It's not just Mesopotamia. It's a lot more than Mesopotamia. So here is the full extent of the Persian Empire compared to the modern world. Okay, so if we take a map of the modern world, where we have countries like modern Egypt, with its kind of rectangular borders, right? And this is what we call Saudi Arabia. This is what we call Turkey, Iraq, Iran, right? And all these other countries next to them, this entire area is the full extent of the Persian Empire. Give or take. They're really small areas that were temporarily a part of it, that who knows, right? But nonetheless, it was the largest of all the empires. So, we'll study that tomorrow. It's the most important part of Mesopotamian history because, well, finally, the Persians are going to bump into, remember what Patrick said? The bigger the empire, the more the enemies. Well, the Persian Empire is going to go all the way over to here. And they're going to bump into some folks that have discovered a new idea. It's called freedom. And we don't want to be ruled by you guys over here. And we're not going to let you conquer us. Fantastic. All right, that's coming up, folks. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks, everybody. Bye for now.
Bye.